This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Hour number two with Michael Bumpus, the former NFL wide receiver, the former high school head coach, our beloved Coug in the house for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant, and it is that time of the morning. It is time for a little Blue 42 with Brock Heward.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you this morning?
Doing fantastic. A little cloudy, a little cold outside, but I can't complain at all. Got a question for you. It stems from a conversation that Danny and I had yesterday, because we were talking about how Pete Carroll made a last-ditch effort going to Denver to try and convince Peyton Manning to come play for the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. A different time for Pete Carroll as an NFL coach, and a different time, too, for Peyton Manning, who, of course, was coming off of that neck surgery. We were of the opinion that it might have been difficult for Peyton Manning, who seems to really want to have his hands in everything and a lot of control over everything, to gel with Pete Carroll. How do you feel about how those two would have been able to work together as a partnership, given that you played with Peyton Manning for a time?
Yeah, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about that, and I had a little smile on my face, remembering 2012, remembering a little letter, Paul, that I wrote to Peyton for the radio website. I didn't ever send it to Peyton, actually. I just did a Dear Peyton, why the Seahawks made sense, and ran through all of that and had a whole bunch of fun with it, and thought there was a real opportunity, but obviously there wasn't. He was going to stay in Denver with his buddy Stokely and John Elway, and it worked out pretty darn well to get to a Super Bowl for him and ultimately to win that last one with a really good defense around him. So the Peyton that I knew, Paul, in 2001, in 2002, in 2003, you're probably right. That one would have had a really difficult time. But the Peyton Manning that I was around later into, you know, those 2010s, and not as a teammate anymore, but just around him and actually doing some preseason football games and seeing him and interacting with him and actually still interacting with him. That Peyton Manning in 2012 that, you know, was coming off of being released from Indianapolis, who knew that neck injury was a ticking time bomb as far as how much career he had left. Would he have made it work with that defense, with Marshawn Lynch in a run game? I think he actually would have. You know, correct me if I'm wrong. I think Edgerrin James went into the Hall of Fame, right? Like, they ran the football in Indianapolis. Like, they were a run, play-action team. And he obviously then was a check-with-me quarterback, getting anything and everything, to your point, that he could get to with that brain of his. So I would tend to agree with you and Danny if it was early in his career. But at that stage of his career, where it was all about winning championships, where it was all about, you know, taking care of the football and understanding that over the arc of his career, as you look at his interception numbers and everything else, I think he kind of would have liked that defense in Marshawn in the 12s and would have said, run the ball, play action, throw it when we need to, sign me up, and win 12 games a year and win some more Super Bowls. I think that version of Peyton actually would have worked, Paul, with this team and that defense and this head coach in particular.
Question two. All right, Brock, we all know what NFL is like. There's always some young stud who's going to get drafted, who's gunning for your position. Do you think athletes are okay when they see that young stud drafted at their position? Are they looking over their shoulder? What do you think?
Yeah. Bump, I think they're always looking over their shoulder in the not-for-long league, right? This isn't the NBA or baseball where you get your guaranteed dough, and even hockey for that matter. Like, if you get a new contract, Russell, Bobby, all the guys here, they know basically they've got 2 years of guaranteed money. By the time you get to that third year, it's like, well, they're going to start looking and seeing if there's a better, cheaper option. And there's no guarantees from year 3 through 4 or 5, whatever, for Russ and Bobby and and those that have signed some long-term extensions. So, no, and I think in particular a program like Seattle's that is just has its DNA in youth, that Pete wants young people, that John Schneider, coming out of Ron Wolf's philosophy and in Green Bay, is you're going to replenish through that draft. Nothing is more important. That's the lifeblood of your organization. So, no, I don't think there's hardly ever, I can't really remember a kumbaya when someone was drafted. Heck, even as when I was traded to Indy and Peyton was there and he was obviously the franchise and a number one pick, I don't think he loved that they wasted a fifth round pick trading for a backup quarterback, you know? So in my life experience, bump, no, being around it still, I don't know how many guys that are truly tickled when they see someone drafted at their position, especially in the first three rounds of that draft.
Do you feel like that applies to a guy like Bobby Wagner, who we know he's going to be the starter, he's going to be the guy? When a guy like Jordan Brooks is drafted, do you think that has the same effect on a Bobby Wagner?
Not in year two of his deal, right? He made 18 or making 18 million bucks or whatever. Not this year. He knows he's not going anywhere for this season, but it starts that clock and he can look around and go, oh yeah, Earl, that's right. They drafted Tedrick and others in Lano Hill, and oh, that's there's Sherm, and oh, they drafted Shaquille, and oh, okay, yeah, there's Jordan, and I've got probably one more full guarantee on my deal. And after that, it's going to be, I better keep playing at this high level. I better keep being a tackling machine. I better stay healthy. Otherwise, yeah, at this stage of my career, at that point, he'll be, what, 9-10 years into his career? Yeah, you start looking over your shoulder. So I think there's more understanding, Mike, at that stage of Bobby's career. But I don't think he feels any threat for 2020. He knows that that guy is probably gunning for KJ's job to get on the field next to him. He knows that he's going to have a huge uphill climb with no off season to really build some structure and foundation. So I don't think Bobby's looking at it for 2020, but come 2021, yes, you can rest assured that he knows the writing that's been clearly on the wall.
You know, Brock, we often discuss how quarterbacks feel about players being drafted at positions that a team maybe doesn't need.
I'm sure, Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, right? You know,
right, exactly.
In this last draft, yeah.
Or Aaron Rodgers and a Jordan Love. And
yes.
I'm sure there are other players at other positions that sometimes might feel the same way. And Bump and I were just talking about it briefly in the last segment. If you're Bobby Wagner, yes, you got Daryl Taylor in the second round, but is there a part of you that thinks to yourself, you know, it's great that we brought in this Jordan Brooks guy, but we have so many linebackers and there are other positions on this defense that probably could have been better against the Packers in the playoffs. Why didn't we go after someone there?
Yeah, I think there's probably some reasoning to that. But again, if you're KJ Wright, you tasted free agency a couple years ago. That market was not kind to you. You came back here, made a good chunk of change last season. You're set to make a really good chunk of change this year, but you just know. Those guys know, right? And then they experienced it. Their brothers around them that they won that Super Bowl with, that they got to that second Super Bowl, that they had a four-year run defensively that was as good as any four-year run in the history of this league. So they've experienced it. So I think there's not an unknown to that. They're not certainly blindsided, Paul, by that. But yeah, when that pick was made in the first round, I said it that night. That was one of my first reactions emotionally that night when that move was made was, uh-oh, what's KJ Wright thinking tonight?
Yeah.
You know, as he was sitting there watching that draft, I'm sure thinking, okay, we're going to go pass rusher, one of these elite fast wide receivers. Are they going to find another way to trade down? What are they going to do? Their pick is in? Ooh, who's this? Who? What are we doing? A linebacker?
Who's playing outside linebacker?
Yes. So, yeah, I think for those two guys, sure, there's certainly been some of that conversation.
Question number three. I do want to get your thoughts on this news about the Seahawks potentially adding a veteran running back before we hit the road. But I also, Brock, wanted to get this question in. You are possibly the most unpetty person I know. And I feel like I'm just getting to know you, but I love that about you. You have a great sense of humor. You have a thick skin. You're basically like the opposite of me. That said, yesterday I saw this really funny thing from Paul Pierce. And we'll play the audio of Paul Pierce in just a moment, where he doesn't think that LeBron James is a top five player. It's a bad take. It's a horrible take.
Wow.
And yet I love it because it's petty, because it's built out of Paul Pierce and those Celtics teams rivalry with LeBron James with the Cavs, LeBron James with the Heat. So I'm asking you, Brock Huard, do you have a petty sports opinion on something that you realize is petty, but you still feel this way strongly about something, throwing rationality into the wind?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, you're digging into a tank that I usually try to keep as empty as possible, man. I'm not a very petty person. There's people that I've had rivalry with. I mean, sure, when the Apple Cup comes around and Bump and I have some fun with Huskies and Cougs, there was an athlete that I couldn't stand that I wanted to beat more than any other athlete in my life, Paul, and that was Ryan Leaf. And when the Canadian flag came running around Husky Stadium in November of 97, and that dude ran by me on the field, I actually wanted to hit him like a linebacker, like Bobby. I want to beat that dude so bad. But, not necessarily petty. Play me the sound, and let me see if maybe it invokes something in me that has a little bit of that pettiness factor.
Okay, here is Paul Pierce talking about old LeBron James and how he is not a top five player in his mind.
Bill Russell built up the organization in Boston. Should get way more credit than we give him. And a lot of times he gets left out of conversation. So in saying that, Kareem, look at the names that I say. Kareem, Magic, Jordan, Tim Duncan, Kobe, Bird. These guys are all top 10 players who would either help build up their organization or continue the tradition.
And Paul,
from LeBron, he went and put together a team in Miami.
I think there's a lot of competition.
He came back to Cleveland to put that team together. And then he went to the Lakers, where a tradition has already been made, and we don't know, that's still to be continued. So in saying that, that's my argument.
That's a rough argument. That's a rough take and a rough argument, and it's underwater in a tank. Okay, I found one. And maybe the text hit on a couple of them, but I got one for you. Charlie Whitehurst, I'm petty. How that dude stuck in the league, making as much money as that dude did, and even having his own press conference in Seattle. Yeah, I'm probably a little petty to some of those backup quarterbacks that were able to sustain their careers a lot longer than my sloppy career, Paul. Okay, how about that? Does that work?
I like
Charlie
that
Whitehurst.
Maybe
was never deserving of a stinking press conference in Seattle. His beard was ugly. He couldn't play, and yet he played a decade in the league. So there, that's it. It's off.
That's great. That's
and
perfect.
I love you, Charlie.
You know what? I love it. We brought you down to our level for just a moment. I'm very curious as to how he was able to get himself in the league for as long as he did. That hair, man, I like the hair, Brock.
I can't help it. Oh no, the beard,
very
the
grungy
hair, the whole deal. Yep, absolutely. How is your hair hanging in there? Have you gotten it?
Get some curlies in the back.
Really?
The sides are so thick, and I use a hair dryer for those who
Can I throw one question your guys' way? At Blue 42 to Bump and to Paulie. Paul, because you are an esteemed receiver, an All-American flag football receiver now, and Bump, you obviously made a living doing it. I was listening to Clayton yesterday with the afternoon guys, and he brought up the thought that maybe Russell Wilson would want to see Antonio Brown in a Seahawk uniform. Are you in any way signing off on Antonio Brown and the possibility? Because obviously they added Dorsett and they bring Swain in the late rounds. But if Antonio Brown is cleared by the league, is that a guy that you would entertain? And do you think Russell really has any desire to see him here in Seattle?
Well, here's the thing. Tom Brady clearly liked him, but that does not make the guy someone that you should bring
aboard. Bruce Arians, by the way, told Tom Brady clearly, nope, worked with the dude. Not going to do it. We got two already. We're going to win with them. We are not rolling with Antonio Brown. So Bruce, I think, put his bourbon glass down and then put his foot down and said, no, not going to do that one. Bump?
I wouldn't do it. I mean, I love the talent. The guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever do it. But he's getting older, and he's just mentally, he's just not in the right place.
No.
If we get Antonio Brown from 3-4 years ago, most definitely. But I think the Seahawks is the most kumbaya organization in the NFL, and you don't want to bring in a guy who's going to shake things up. I would hard pass on Antonio Brown.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, because when they were not kumbaya, the only thing I would argue, I would agree with you. I would, like, entertain it, kind of smile at Russell, like, oh, I know you wanted superstars. Yeah, I know. I know you would have loved to have had a receiver, but we're going to be just fine. And you've made everybody, you know, really good around you for all your years, and you'll continue to do that. But the only thing I would say to that bump is actually in their heyday, 13 and 14, they weren't necessarily kumbaya, as it turns out, right? As Percy was punching Golden Tate before the Super Bowl, as they were fighting on the field, as Sherm was an instigator of instigators, and, you know, they were constantly in the headlines for, you know, friction maybe both inside and friction they created outside. Could he bring a little bit of that edge that these really nice guys with Bobby and Russ leading it? You're right. You don't have any of that nonsense. Could he bring any of that edge?
Man, I don't know. That's no. Yeah. What is the edge that he's bringing? Like irrational temper tantrums every
lunacy.
5 seconds?
Yeah, lunacy.
Right. So you know what? You want lunacy as a linebacker or a defensive player, right? Do you want a lunatic at wide receiver? I mean, goodness. And he's so talented, too. That's the most frustrating thing about it, Brock. Like, he's one of the most talented receivers that I've seen play.
Yeah.
And he can do some things that are so incredible. But, like, it's not just all of this off-the-field stuff and how, honestly, I think there's something wrong that he needs help. He is a bad person. Like, yes. I feel very comfortable saying that. Let's look at the track record of all the things that he has supposedly done and the fact that teams are not willing to give him a second chance, and yet they're willing to give guys like Aldon Smith his 40th chance or whatever. But I do think, though, Brock, it is interesting that Russell Wilson might be interested in it, because we have seen the Seahawks just last year with a guy that Russell Wilson wanted to bring in and Josh Gordon. They gave him his sixth chance, seventh chance? I'm not even sure what chance that was.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, Paul. Like, many of those guys, Aldon Smith and those players, Josh Gordon, many times hurt themselves, their own addiction, their own demons. They hurt themselves. To your point about Antonio Brown, he has allegedly many different times hurt others. And we saw him hurt his own football team. He walked out on his own football team. The cardinal sin that you do not do in a playoff run, said, nope, I'm out, taking my ball, and I am quitting on you guys, and good luck to you. And, yeah, once you hurt others, as he has done allegedly off the field a number of different times, and then you hurt your football team and you quit on them, very hard for me to ever support bringing that kind of person into your organization.
Brock, we've kept you on a long time. I did want to hear what you have to say about the Seahawks potentially being interested in Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, I think that's a move that makes some sense. And it's all about injury. It's all about this offseason. And it's all about Chris Carson. And I know, you know, there's a possibility that these guys can start coming around the facilities. We'll see when Washington State, you know, begins to open that up. But, you know, they can start to eventually here. I think in June they're going to be able to start coming back. But I think when you've got Rashad Penny off his knee and you got Chris Carson off of his hip, and those are two major significant injuries, I would want to have somebody that's been there and done it before. Now, Freeman also has been nicked up a little bit and was out all of 18 and had a down 19, but on a one-year flyer, and by the way, maybe a little extra incentive, as we talked about in your first question. Hey, when someone else is drafted or brought in, you know, Chris Carson wants his money. And then if Chris Carson sees another running back coming in, I think he's going to be motivated to run over dudes like the linebacker in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Like, I think he's going to be ready to roll and do all he can to make sure his carries don't go anywhere else.
That's Forrest Whitaker, right?
There you go. Yes. What was his character?
Got it.
Yeah, what would that
be? I forget his name.
Oh,
I need to watch that movie again. I've been going through a list of 80s movies recently, and I have not gone back down to that side of the list. I'm on The Bees right now. The most recent movie I watched was Big, which I had never seen before. Very good.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Very B+.
Nice.
Yeah.
B+. Awesome. Well, you guys have a great
Brock,
Thursday.
Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you joining us every single Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Thanks to your good friends at Toyota of Puyallup. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Polly. See you, Bump.
See ya.
Bump, Brock mentioned something just a moment ago that I do feel like deserves a little extra time, and we can maybe get into some of our own petty sports opinions a little bit later. With Antonio Brown coming aboard, look at the text line right now, 710-710, the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. There are people that are saying, bring him in. And yes, they would have so much talent. in that wide receiver core if they were able to bring him in. Here is my big reservation with him, Bump. You can't trust him. It's not even necessarily that he's a bad person. All he had to do was shut up in New England, and he would have been on that team all season long. He would have. All he had to do was shut up, and he couldn't keep his mouth shut. And he decided to weigh in and send his goons essentially via text to talk to that person who had alleged sexual misconduct, okay? And I'm talking about it from the most callous perspective I possibly can. Like, I'm operating like I'm John Dorsey. I just don't care about all of the things that this person might have done off the field. He still couldn't do the bare minimum to just keep himself on that roster. So I think he's reprehensible. I don't think he deserves another chance. He does not strike me as someone that you can trust. And doesn't it come down to that ultimately?
Yeah, it comes down to, can you trust him when he leaves the building? And what type of influence will he have on guys in the building? I think about this Seahawk offense. Who's the leader of this team in that offense? Russell Wilson, the nicest guy in the NFL. You got a Tyler Lockett, one of the nicest guys in the NFL. You got a DK, who's a beast when he has the ball, but also a nice guy. And then you think about just the identity of this offense, of this team, and it's like, is it worth bringing in a guy who can shake that up? Brock made a good point saying that in the early years, you know, there was Sherm, there was all these guys who were controversial, and it worked out for them because they were under different leadership then. Russell Wilson wasn't the clear-cut leader at that time. So now that it's Russell's team, it's kind of like, okay, what guy is going to come and fit in with this? And he's getting older. It is what it is. He's getting older. Unless you can get him for minimum cheap, then you kind of entertain it. But I think you think of the long run. You think of the development of guys on the team. I think DK is in a good spot. Tyler's in a good spot. I like David Moore. I think he has a chance to make some plays. You got Dorsett. He just doesn't fit the identity of this football team personality-wise. Can the dude play? Most definitely. One of the best to ever do it. But at this point, you got a good thing going. Just keep doing what you're doing, Seahawks, and leave AB alone. I'd leave him alone.
The wide receiver position for this team right now, it's good. It's not great, but it's good. I mean, in Tyler Lockett, you've got a guy who, and we'll dive into this a little bit later. Did you know he was open on like 22% of plays last season? That's an insane amount. He's great, and he's only 27. He's in his prime. And you have DK Metcalf, who I'm sure we're just scratching the surface of what he could potentially be with that size and that frame and what he was able to do his rookie season, and in particular against the Philadelphia Eagles in the playoffs. I mean, he showed up in a big-time moment. You've also got a ton of tight ends, and I like the idea of having an Antonio Brown aboard in terms of the player, just the player, okay? Yeah. And who wouldn't? You'd have to be crazy to say you don't want the player on the team, but dealing with the headaches, when you have depth at tight end, extreme amounts of depth at tight end, and you just run a different style of offense, I understand that the Let Russ Cook crowd would like the player, specifically the player. And I can't say that enough, the player, Antonio Brown. But all the nonsense that guy brings to the table, like if he could just shut up and get out of his own way, great. He can't. It's not possible for him. And you know he's going to go on Instagram Live with some stupid rant of calling himself Mr. Big Chest for some reason again, and he is going to ultimately turn off you, me, everyone listening, and even his own teammates, no matter how good he plays on the field.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about Seattle, too, is, man, it's a big city, but it's small, man. I mean, stuff gets out fairly quickly out here. So if he were to do anything wrong, it's going to get out. It's going to get blown up. And I think that if he were to come in, would he be okay being a number three, number four receiver? I don't think so. I think he's going to come in. He's going to want the football. He's Antonio Brown. He's had a bunch of success in this league. And I think I'm okay with Tyler Lockett being the number one. I'm okay with DK being the number two. And I'm okay seeing if David Moore, Philip Dorsett, John Ursua, Freddie Swain, if those guys compete as well. So I just like where they're at. I think it's a good mix. You got your downfield threat. You got your big guy. You got your quick guy in the slot. You have every type of receiver in the receiver room right now. I say you leave it as it is. Focus on getting a running back just in case things don't work out at that position.
He is Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. It is Danny and Gallant right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. We are hoping that baseball is on the verge of returning. But with things getting a little bit contentious between players and owners, is the return of the sport really right around the corner? We're going to ask Mariners general manager Jerry Dipoto about that next. Don't go anywhere right here at 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bump is sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. Danny on a nice little vacay. Hope that he is enjoying it, and you'll hear from him when he gets back next week, next Tuesday. So, Bump, before we bring in Jerry Dipoto, I'm very curious as to your thoughts on this current back and forth that's taking place between baseball's players and baseball's owners. Right now, there is friction between the two because you have, in baseball, an agreement. You have a collectively bargained agreement where players have agreed with the ownership that they want they get a specific amount of the revenue. And now, all of a sudden, because of this COVID-19 situation, owners are acting as if they're poor, and they want the players who have negotiated through the CBA their contracts to be paid in a certain way, and they want them prorated. They're trying to change the way that salaries are paid out this coming season because there's going to be less income made by all of these teams, and they want to turn it into a percentage. If you're a player in that situation, how do you feel about it? You've got the extra perspective. I know in the NFL, like, the guys who are at the top of the food chain, we heard a lot of them have issues with this collective bargaining agreement. There are a lot of guys in baseball that aren't making the money that, like, Mike Trout and guys like that are. How would you feel if you were in a similar situation to your status in the NFL, in baseball, where you're seeing this back and forth, and you probably want to play, but you also don't want less money to be going into your pocket?
If I am in the majors and I hold the same status I held in the NFL, I'm trying to play. Because one, I'm not getting paid the money that a lot of these guys are getting paid. And I just want money coming in, you know? I want to keep the money flowing. Now, I get their frustration. They signed a deal. They're ready to go. But suck it up, man. Suck it up, Buttercup. Get out there and play some ball. That's my, but I'm not making 10 million either and about to be cut in half. Like, I get it. I understand both sides, but me personally, I'm playing.
We now welcome in Mariners general manager, Jerry Dipoto. And Jerry, we appreciate you joining us every Thursday the way that you do. Are you concerned about things getting contentious between the players and the owners over salary, like we have seen over the last week, especially with Blake Snell's rant?
I can't say any more than I ordinarily would be. I have the maybe the unique perspective of having worn both of these hats, you know, as both a player and on the club side, and I have been through about as big an inferno in CBA discussions you can get as a player in 1994. But I agree with Michael. My general thought is, you know, just go play. At the end of the day, we're very fortunate to do what we do, and, you know, whatever our job is in professional sports, and in this moment in time, and I guess in any moment, my urge is, like, as we develop culture and as we develop character with our club, we understand that there's a big world around you and there are a lot of people suffering. Don't whine, just go play.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like athletes have a responsibility at this point to kind of get things back to normal if they can. And I think if guys can understand that, maybe they'll have a better chance to play. But I guess we'll see how that works out, Jerry. So it's Felix week at the station. Felix, he's balled out, had a great career. Is there a favorite Felix moment or game that you have?
His last one. You know, of the time that I spent with Felix, and we were together here for 4 years, and you know, the way he interacted with our fans, and I wish it would have been 30,000 that night, but the way he interacted with our fans and vice versa was phenomenal. To see, they knew he wasn't coming back. He knew he wasn't coming back. You know, he was no longer at the top of his game the way he was for almost a decade here in Seattle. But the collective love on the field that night was really one of the coolest nights I've spent in baseball. I think it was awesome.
We saw very cool news the other day, Jerry, that Nelson Cruz is a finalist for Major League Baseball's Humanitarian Award. You know him very well, so this must come as no surprise.
Yeah, Nelson's a phenomenal guy. Couldn't say enough nice things about a human being who happens to be an awesome baseball player. But he's a leader in a clubhouse, in the community. He finds ways to do the right thing and give back, you know, from kids in the Dominican Republic to communities, you know, and wherever he plays in the United States. He's a very thoughtful person. And, you know, he was raised in a good family. He's the qualities that and character traits that he developed as a young kid are evident today, and they're evident when you meet the people who he grew up with. Such a great guy, and we miss him. He was such a critical part of a good clubhouse, and still such a productive player. I root for him as long as he's not playing against us every day.
It's a tricky time right now, and Jerry, I honestly feel guilty seeing that he's going to the Dominican Republic and helping people out. I'm like, what, man? I'm here playing Call of Duty all day long, and here's Nelson Cruz, who's like going to other countries and helping people out, and especially during a time like this where it's just really difficult to give back. But I'm sure that there are some players in your organization that have also been doing some similar things, giving back to the community.
Yeah, I most pointedly, I know Marco Gonzalez, D. Gordon, who's, you know, celebrated for his philanthropy, what a lot of our guys, you know, tend to fly under the radar because, you know, we are tucked away in the Pacific Northwest, but they do so many good things. And you know, through the course of this, and I'll say, you know, even just recently, what Marco and Monica Gonzalez are doing with the Pacific Northwest Harvest Group and their peanut butter drive, I think it's creative, it's fun, and it's something that really makes a difference in the community. It feeds people at a time when they need it. And I know, you know, I like where we started the conversation. It gets very easy to point at the discontent that may exist publicly when we're talking about, you know, player salaries, etc. But understand that most players want to play. Most players want to be out there. We were getting caught up in the weeds on a small percentage of players who have different feelings. Their primary concerns are about safety and health and their family and getting back out there and doing the things that they love to do. And I think in the end, that'll come out. That will shine on both sides, because I think the clubs want to play.
All right, Jerry, you're a baseball guy through and through. I'm a football guy through and through. If there was another sport you could have played at a high level, which sport would you choose?
Which sport would I choose? If you asked which sport I was good at, I was going to say none. But which sport would I choose? I would choose hockey. You know, I love hockey, and I played football in high school, but there's something about the hockey as I've grown. I grew up, I watched it, I was a fan of it. I can't skate very well, so that would hold me back. But I love the game. I love the speed of the game and the strategy that is associated with it. And I, for whatever reason, I've known a lot of hockey players in my lifetime, and I think their personalities generally they appeal to me. I would like to grow up and be an NHL hockey player.
That's a sport that also I would have loved to do. That was a sport my father played for a while, and he was supposedly pretty good at it. I honestly was never able to watch it or anything like that. But man, Jerry, it is about as brutal as it gets as far as like at being a kid and playing a sport. Cause you got to get up at like 4 a.m. to go to rinks, the small rinks that are located all over the place across a general region. It is difficult. You got to have like the best parents ever to that are willing to make all sorts of sacrifices to play that sport. But it is a fun sport, and I definitely love watching it in person.
Yeah, that's why I urged my son to play baseball. It's a fun game. Truth be told, like we talked about a week ago, anytime you can get exposure to multiple sports and have the chance to learn new motor skills and athletic movements, I think it's a great opportunity. All the games have, there's something unique. I can't say I'm terrible at basketball, but if you told me I could go play basketball for John Wooden, I would do that in a minute. If you told me, you know, I could go play basketball for Phil Jackson, sign me up. Mostly because I want to experience what that's like, even though I wouldn't hit a shot. You know, it's the team sport, the world of team sports just attracts you. I'd play any of them if given the opportunity.
I've got one last question, because this Seattle is going to get an NHL team soon, and we're still waiting to see what the team nickname is going to be. I want it to be the Kraken. I think that's an awesome name. Makes me think of Liam Neeson in Clash of the Titans. And whenever I think of Liam Neeson, I just enjoy that. There's also been rumored that they could be the Sockeyes. If you could name Seattle's hockey team anything, what nickname would you give it?
Wow, you're catching me by surprise. I have not given it too much thought in my daily events, but I guess at the end of the day, of the something that is associated with the region, Sockeyes doesn't sound too, you know, I guess it doesn't sound too ominous, but I guess you could run into a wild Sockeye every now and then that wouldn't let go. So it's whatever it is, Kraken, I'm not sure what that reference is other than Gary Sanchez is what I think of. So that would be, I think Yankees catcher when I think that. So maybe not.
Interesting.
But I'm all for anything as long as they play hockey.
We like that, Jerry. It's interesting. And I'm also, well, here's the thing, and I'm sorry, I'm going to continue to dive into this. The Sockeye name, it drives me crazy because everyone eats Sockeye. Like, I'm going to get salmon this weekend. Bears eat Sockeye. Like, I don't want to be a nickname that's just getting demolished by the animal kingdom all the time. It's cool that they swim upstream and all, but, like, I don't want to die, you know?
As I said, if they're playing hockey and I know they're out there banging around and I think they're among the toughest athletes in the world, it's fun for me to go see and I'll go watch regardless of what the name is.
Jerry, we always appreciate you joining us, man. You stay safe out there and we look forward to hearing from you next Thursday.
You got it, guys.
That is General Manager of the Seattle Mariners, Jerry DePoto. Michael Bump is sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Yesterday's show reminded me of the day that my sports innocence died. When did you realize that sports weren't just a game? They were a business. 710-710 to get aboard on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We got Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. Yesterday, Jess surprised me by booking former Seahawks safety, UW safety, and for me, Patriot safety, Lawyer Malloy. Lawyer was one of my favorite players growing up. Wore number 36, smacked dudes around, was part of a really good secondary that also had Ty Law that helped Tom Brady win his first championship and really, I think, laid the groundwork for what that team was before Tom Brady and Bill Belichick came in. But there was a moment, Bump, where my sports innocence sort of died, and it involved Lawyer Malloy. And I just thought about this after the show. When they released Lawyer Malloy at the beginning of the 2003 season, I was devastated. I really was. I loved him. And I thought to myself, why are they making this move? He's a really good player. This makes zero sense. And then he signed with the Bills, and the Bills shut out the Patriots like 6 days later, 31-0. And Lawyer Malloy had a sack. And, I mean, the Bills just looked like a wagon, and the Patriots looked awful. And after the game, I think Tom Jackson on NFL Primetime said that players hate Bill Belichick. It looked really, really bad in that moment. But then as the season progressed, New England ended up winning like 14 games in a row or 12 games in a row to finish out the regular season. They won the remaining games the entire way to the Super Bowl, which they won too. And ever since then, like, you've seen Bill Belichick make these ruthless decisions. And I'm like, man, it isn't just about playing a game, and it's worked out for Belichick, but it is so damn cold along the way. So that's where my sports innocence really died. Like, yeah. I thought it was just about playing a game, and you know what? Pay the good guys, pay the good players. What was it for you where you first realized that sports weren't a game, they were a business?
Mine, I would have to say it was in like the early 90s when the Raiders left L.A. I just couldn't understand why the Raiders would go to Oakland. I'm like, Oakland? Why would they go to Oakland? As a kid, I'm like, L.A., where else would you want to be? You know, as a kid, I told myself, I'm never moving out of L.A. Where else? L.A. was the center of the universe for me, right? And to see Oakland leave, I was just confused. I remember my grandmother read a news article to me, and I wasn't even really a diehard Raider fan, as all my family members were. You know, it was just something that most of my friends and family members, they were all Raiders fans. So when they left, I was really confused, and I couldn't understand why somebody would leave L.A. But then my grandma broke it down to me, like, the Coliseum is garbage, it's a bad facility, they need a better place to play and all that stuff. She broke it down, yeah, then, and they barely renovated a few years ago, but...
Right. I mean, they still used it.
That broke my heart.
What the heck?
It's the Coliseum, you know, that you play in the Coliseum for the name, not for the venue itself. It's all about the name and the history, I guess, in Coliseum.
You're so right. Look, I'm not a fan of the Raiders, but the Raiders are just such a cooler organization than the Rams, and I think that Ice Cube did a 30 for 30 where he talked about the Los Angeles Raiders. The silver and black uniforms, the weird pirate lifestyle that this fan base has. I think it belongs in LA. I think it belongs in a big city because there's a blend of a lot of different things that I think just turn them into more of like a global brand than most NFL teams. And then, yeah, you're right. They move back to Oakland. And being in Las Vegas, it's weird. Like, so Las Vegas to me, Bump, is like a global city. It doesn't belong to anyone. It doesn't belong to Nevada. And I know there are people that live there, but I feel like Las Vegas sort of belongs to everyone. So I suppose this is actually maybe good for the Oakland Raiders and all those people, formerly Oakland Raiders and all those people who have rooted for them for all this time. But it's just weird, man. And yeah, I would have felt the same way as you if the Raiders had left the city that I lived in. I wouldn't want to root for the Rams, especially now. Look at these garbage uniforms they have.
Is there any franchise you feel fits Las Vegas? Any team that you say, all right, yeah, that makes sense. The Vegas whatevers? Any football team in NFL?
Especially, I mean, the Jaguars, because, like, Jacksonville, are you serious? And I don't want our limey oppressors to get a team. And that's what's going to happen. London is going to get the Jaguars. They're going to call them the Jaguars eventually. And they're going to steal our beloved Cougar quarterback Gardner Minshew from us, which is bogus. It's going to happen. And I mean, maybe COVID-19 stops it. Maybe that's the only good thing that COVID-19 brings, is that we don't have an NFL team go to England. Like, I like the idea of going to England to travel and all that stuff. But at the same time, like, no, England, I'm sorry. You have oppressed too many people to all of a sudden steal one of our football teams. That is not going to slide. So I think the Jaguars in Vegas makes sense. Outside of that, I mean, no one in L.A. cares about the Rams, so, like, move the Rams there. You can move the Chargers there. The Raiders, I think, need to go back to L.A. It just feels right.
I'm with you. You know, as a kid, the Raiders made me realize sports was a business. As an adult, I remember when the Seahawks invited me to camp. I've made every team I've ever tried out for. It wasn't a thought in my mind that I wasn't going to make this football team. And I remember walking in for our physical exams. There's this receiver, Anthony Russo, who played for UW. Big ups, Anthony Russo. We walk in together and I'm sizing him up. I'm like, same height, same weight, same position. And we take our physicals and one guy goes, oh, that's Anthony Russo. I'm like, oh yeah, I know the guy. He goes, yeah, you're competing with him. And I looked at him, I'm like, okay, just got real. There's a chance that I might not make this team. So as an adult, that when I was like, okay. Because I had never not made a team prior to then, you know? So as an adult, that was my moment where I was like, okay, this is real.
What was that like? I mean, the pressure, the anxiety that you felt, like, obviously you've got to be confident, but there's got to be a little bit more to it than that when you realize you're in one of these do or die situations.
Yeah, you just realize you can't make mistakes. You know, it is what it is. But at that time, you know, you're 20-something years old. You're super confident. You know, still there was no doubt in my mind I wasn't going to make the team. But I knew I had direct competition. So I'm watching every move he makes. You know, I'm watching every mistake he makes. I'm watching everything he does well. You know, because I know that if I'm going to make this team, I got to beat that guy out. So it adds some pressure. But, you know, if you want to compete, you want to be a professional, you got to get through some stuff like that.
Couple of texts on 710-710 on the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. When Deion Sanders left the Falcons and went to the Cowboys, my heart broke. I was playing Little League in Atlanta at the time. Was he still playing for the Braves at the same time then, too? Man, I can't believe that he was, like, taking a helicopter from Falcons games to Braves games. It's the most badass thing possibly in sports history. Someone texts in, when A-Rod signed with the Texas Rangers and people were dumping buckets of Monopoly money in the upper deck and lower deck of Safeco Field for years afterwards. Losing the glove, yeah, that one must have been hard. I'm so envious that people got to root for him here as a player. He is like the exact prototype of a basketball player that I would have loved. A couple other ones that we've got. We'll keep that going. He is Michael Bumpuson for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. The Seahawks look like they are on the verge of adding someone at a position that they need help at, but they're not adding the veteran that you're all hoping it is. I'll tell you who it could potentially be next. Don't go anywhere.